Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at-Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. Oh my goodness, this has been a very interesting day, family. So I'm just really happy that we were able to get on this evening because we have been having some technical difficulties. You know that that does happen sometime, but it's okay. We are here live and in living color. And before we begin tonight's program, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and certainly we are very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Well, as I said a few moments ago, we have been having some technical difficulties. Hopefully, we will be able to go through a smooth sailing tonight for our program, but if not, you know what to do, meaning if for some reason we are interrupted or cut off, we usually are able to get back on within a very short period of time, so hopefully you know that, and we'll, of course, call back in or just hang in there or whatever, because we usually are able to get the technical difficulties ironed out in a short period of time. And again, we foresee that could happen tonight, and if so, you again know what to do. Moving right along, tonight we are going to talk about several things, including a continuation of what we have been talking about over the course of the past few weeks, and that is something that we call gentrification. We want to have that dialogue because we are in the process of planning a national summit for next year, and we want our brothers and sisters from all over the country to be able to provide us with really on-target reports. We want to do a historical perspective of gentrification in our community. We're going to look at the pros and the cons. We're going to look at what it is that they say gentrification is about. We know it really does, at least in our community. So we want to start documenting that on a national level and be able to show that there's something very sinister that has gone on. This is not a new situation. Gentrification has been around for a while, but it's a very interesting kind of form now, and that's what we want to begin to point out. Why is this happening so rapidly and in so many areas in our community throughout the U.S.? Why is that happening? Why are all these schools closing? Why are these new prisons being built? It is just a very interesting thing to begin to observe, and we have done that and will continue to do that, and we will connect these dots because there is something that we can do about some of this. Some of it is kind of already, you know, so far advanced that there's no turning back. For example, Harlem. We see now D.C. And as we begin to kind of backtrack, we are also now able to connect the dots with charter schools and gentrification. That's right. We're going to talk about that a little later on. And why we have got to begin to do what has been said for so long, and that is not only to free the land, okay, secure it and sustain it. We're going to talk more about that later on. In fact, we're going to have a brother coming on that's going to be joining us shortly. Brother Masai will be coming on with us, and he's going to give us a report on Iman Jamil Al-Amin and also a few other political prisoners, because we're going to do that tonight as well. You know we do that periodically, bring you updates and other kinds of information regarding those who, fought for us, for all of us, and unfortunately had to or was succumbed to the so-called political machinery. So we're going to talk more about that as well. And let's see, what else are we going to do tonight? We are going to talk about, a couple of things. We've been mentioning to you for the past couple of weeks something that we call the African Women's Army. Well, we have begun that process, and we want to share that with you tonight. For those sisters who are inclined to become involved, we certainly invite you to do so, and we're going to tell you how you can get involved tonight. Also, we're going to let you know more about the Me Woman Movement think tanks that have been readied for you and how we are getting ready to put that in motion as well. Think tanks and also some study sessions, because if, in fact, we are going to grow as sisters, as women, and as our community, as our villages, we've got to be more on point. We're talking about bringing our movements forward, and that is what we have been talking about tonight, as well as, or what we will be talking about tonight, as well as what we have been talking about in previous weeks. We've been talking about how do we bring forward some of the work, some of the legacy, influential and instrumental for us over the years. We have to begin to make the proper assessments and to apply now the types of apparatuses that are needed for today. And that's what we have been gearing up to do, at least from the Million Woman Movement standpoint, and certainly other groups and organizations have been doing that as well, as you've heard before. And so now we're ready to move forward. Here in Philly, we're working on the African United Front. So surely there is progress being made, and of course, you know, the issue again of gentrification, but also we'll be ready to tell you that the Me Woman Movement is beginning the process to formulate the school that we talked about. We talked about building a school for girls. Well, we are, in fact, in that mode to do so. Today I had the opportunity to meet Sister Jaguar Wright. She's from Philly, and for those of you who are not familiar with her, you can Google her. She's a relatively popular songstress for today, and I did get a chance to talk with her on a one-on-one. She was here performing at an event here in Philly, and I mentioned to her that we are planning some major things for the Million Woman Movement, which did, of course, entail the School for Girls. And she was very interested, and I indicated to her that what we're working on, and we'll be doing this nationwide, but we're going to start in Philly, we're going to start contacting some of the artists that are from Philly, because within the next 2 years, we want to put together a couple of CD compilations. So we have Music Soul Child here in Philly, we have Got here in Philly, The Roots, is quite a few folks that are here in Philly or from Philly who are very well known in the music and entertainment industry. And what we're going to be doing is going to them and ask them, will they support our school for girls? We want it to be independent, and so we are going to be seeking various people who we feel will support or should support that kind of endeavor, and we'll keep you posted on that. We're going to send them some official letters and make some official calls, because certainly they have the capability of doing that. Needless to say, Will Smith is from Philly. Well, we're going to see what our Philly folk are going to do. We feel pretty confident that we're going to get some responses, because, you know, we just got that feeling that it's going to be something that they will respond to. And it's not just cool, too, because you know how we do. We do it anyway. All right, moving right along. Let's see, there's a couple of other updates we wanted to give you, and that is, of course, we're going to get ready to open up the mic for you, actually, because we want to have an open mic tonight, and we want to talk about two things, and that particularly is, again, gentrification. I want to also kind of focus on how lately there's been quite a few deaths in our movement. You know, some of our elders, some of our warriors have made transition, and recently, this past week, one of the very close associates to El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, a sister named Yuri, made transition as well. I'm hoping that when Brother Masai comes on, he'll also talk a little about that as well. But, of course, last week about Brother Elam Bay Brass, and I mean, it's just really a whole bunch of folks within these past few, I would say, past few months, actually. Of course, Chukwuma Mumba, Sam Greenlee. It's been quite a few people who have become ancestors, and so, you know, obviously, it's time to step this thing up, and, you know, folks have left us with some very, very incredible kinds of legacies and work, and we owe it to them, to ourselves, to our children, to make certain that we continue that. So with that said, we're going to open up the lines right now before we go to our guest for tonight. And we want to hear if you have something that you want to share with us, something you want to convey to us, if you have an announcement, if there's an event coming up that you want to share, if there's some information that you have found that you want to share. We're going to get ready to open up the lines. But before we do that, it's time for our history, our story moment. And so we want you to get ready to share whatever information you wish to share with us. And in the meantime, we're going to get ready to go to our line. And we're going to hear from Sister Coca, as we have been hearing for these past few weeks, about various people each month who have made an impact or have done something that we feel is warrants us to know about, is significant. Well, we're going to hear about a few folks tonight, and this is now June. Oh, and by the way, this is Black Music Month, which is why I mentioned earlier how we're getting ready to go to some of these artists here in Philly and you know, talk to them about assisting us with this project of our School for Girls by producing a compilation CD. Everybody likes music, so, hey, would not our people support something that's going to help build an independent school? I certainly think so. But at any rate, we'll talk more about that shortly. Let's go to our line, and we're going to hear from Sister Coker and see who it is for tonight that she's going to tell us about. Sister Coker, do we have you on this line?
Yes. And praising our good evening. And good evening to all of the wonderful quintessential listeners. And praising our Creator this first Saturday of June, and Odunday's Eve. I call it Odunday's Eve because tomorrow is Odunday. Just like you have Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, this is Odunday Eve. And we will celebrate the following people. I found quite a few people, but I didn't have the opportunity to research all of them. So let me just give you Morgan Freeman first. He was born the first of the month in 1937 in Memphis, Tennessee. He became prominent, appearing as Easy Reader on the Public Broadcasting's Electric Company program from 1971 to 1977. Morgan acted on stage, and he performed in movies and was acclaimed for his character roles in such films as Seven, Driving Miss Daisy, and Armistead. Cornel West II, 1953, in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He is a philosopher, a theologian, an activist, and his early thought was influenced by the Black Panther Party. He attended Harvard in 1970. A scholarship and graduated in 1973 magna cum laude. Hello. He completed his in 1980, and his dissertation was republished as Ethical Dimensions of Marxist Thought in 1991, and he also wrote other books. The final one is Curtis Mayfield, III.
All right. Yeah.
He, of course, you know, he was a singer, a composer, and he began singing with the Impressions. Mm-hmm. And their song later on had they were politically charged songs later on the group was singing. But unfortunately, his career kind of ended in August of 1990 when he fell at an outdoor performance in Brooklyn, New York, which left him paralyzed from his neck down. And I don't have any information on him now. So if anybody knows anything, please call and let us know. And prayerfully, he didn't transition. I can't recall his transitioning, but if anybody has
yes,
any
information. Yeah, I think he did, if I remember correctly.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, there's some other folks. Let me see. Andre Watts and Eleanor Morton. And we'll get to those in the next few weeks. So thank you so much. Thank you for this
opportunity.
All right,
and thank you, my sister.
So,
okay, well,
right.
I am, of course, more partial to Curtis Mayfield, especially given the fact this is Black Music Month. But you mentioned someone, and we're going to talk a little bit about that a little later on as well, and that's Morgan Freeman. For those of you who kind of keep up with some of the current news with things that people say, well, recently Morgan Freeman was kind of cited as saying something to the effect of he didn't see that race had anything to do with economics or something of that nature. I don't know. Whatever it was kind of real strange. So maybe some of you have a comment about that. Hopefully you do. And again, a little later on, we're going to open up the mic for you if you would like to share with us anything that you have read this week or found or saw or just want to share something with us. We're going to have that open dialogue for you available very shortly. But right now, we're going to go to a topic that I indicated earlier, and that is, of course, that it's so important that we always remember that we have political prisoners. Now, that's not something that most people in this country can say, but we can, along with a few other things. We are the only ones that can really make a case or give a real kind of assertion about human rights violations, et cetera, et cetera. We're the ones, folks. We're the ones. Now, of course, you know what people call the indigenous peoples or the so-called Indians. They, too, have statements that only they can make. And we are the other people. Remember, any other group that came here because they chose to. So rest assured, we're going to talk more about that reality as we proceed in the near future. But the point being, we have political prisoners. We have people because of their political ideas, conversations, activities, involvement, things of that nature, they are now incarcerated. Many definitely are totally innocent in terms of what they were being charged with or what they were indicted for, what have you. So with that said, we who believe in freedom cannot rest? Well, absolutely. And so we want to make certain that we continue to bring to you updates. Some of you may have already heard that there is, in fact, a concern around the health of Iman Jamil Al-Amin. Some of you may remember him as H. Rap Brown. I'm hoping that all of you have heard of him at some point in time because truly, this brother, I mean, definitely made an impact on many, many lives, just as Chairman Fred Hampton, just as Bobby Seals or well, more so Huey Newton and Imari Obadeli. There's so many, but here we have him still with us and, of course, again, is a political prisoner. So what we want to do is give you an update or a report. For those of you who do not have the information, please make sure you take the time to write this information down. It's so very important that we do everything possible. How can we expect people to stand up for us when, in fact, something happens, we abandon them? We can't even dream of that. So it's so important that we do the right thing for real and make certain that our political prisoners know that we are fighting for them. As you well know, here in Philly, on April the 26th, there was a very good event for Mumia Abu-Jamal, as there is every year. And, you know, we got to make sure that other political prisoners are also getting the kind of input, juice, whatever you want to call it. We got to make sure that happens. So we're going to be telling you more about some of the projects that we're going to be working with directly. I spoke with Brother Masai earlier, and we talked about Dr. Matua Shakur, Sundi Aliokoli, and there's so many others. And you all, if you don't know, you're going to know. We have to make certain that we keep that information flowing, because we're the ones. We're the ones that can make a difference. We are the ones that will make a difference. So what we're going to do now is go to our live line, and we're going to bring in our extended family member for tonight to talk about Iman Jamil Al-Amin, the whole issue of political prisoners in the U.S., our political prisoners. I think it's very important to specify that. We talk about a lot of other people. You know, folks talk stuff about Palestine, about this, and we should, don't get me wrong, because these are allies. But what about our folks right here? We talk about the prison industrialized complex and the new Jim Crow and what I call the new Jamaica Crow, but what about incarcerated and have been and sometimes tortured, et cetera? What about them? Now, Russell Maroon Schultz is finally freed. After, what, 40 years? Mumia is still incarcerated 30-something years? Iman Jamil Al-Amin is now incarcerated. And at this point has health issues, as several of the political prisoners do. Compassionate relief is a must, family. Let's talk about it. We're going to go now to our live line, and we're going to bring on our brother Masai, and we're going to talk about the issue, the case of Iman Jamil Al-Amin, as well as others, and we want you all to please feel free, when we get finished with this dialogue, if you have questions, comments, please feel free. I'm not sure we're going to be able to open up the chat room, because as I said earlier, we've been having a little bit of technical difficulties. We're going to try to do that, but you know, nevertheless, we know we can open up the line so that you can be heard, you can ask your questions. So we're going to go to that line, and I believe we have our brother with us. Brother Masai, are you there?
I am here, my sister.
All right.
Okay.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for taking the time to join us tonight and helping us to, you know, get more acquainted for those who already have some insight, but certainly I'm sure there are some who do not know, or at least may not know as much as they need to know, especially in terms of what it is that we can do, you know, to help in assisting with this particular situation and the overall situation. So before we go into that, would you please share with our family a little bit about you?
Okay, and I seek refuge in Allah from Satan, the accused, the accursed, the accursed, the rejected. I pray that Allah guide my tongue and guide my heart in all that I say. And assalamu alaikum. Okay, my name is Masai Hosey. I'm currently co-minister of information for the Provisional Government of the Republic of North Africa. I'm also a part of Masjid al-Kaaba, which in turn is part of our Ummah. Community that Imam Jamil established or helped establish. I spent about 14 years in prison as a member of the Black Liberation Army and citizen of the Republic of North Africa, and I guess some folks on the call would know I was in there along with Sister Sophia Bakari. That was my co-defendant. Sophia, in turn, went on to be one of the co-founders of the Jericho Movement, dealing with the issue of political prisoners and POWs in the United States. May Allah be pleased with her. After getting out, I continue to do some work and will continue to be involved with work around struggle, including those the struggle around folks inside, you know, making people aware of why they're there actually and working towards not only their release, but working to make sure that the struggles that they are a part of continue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also heavily involved in movements to abolish the PIC, prison industrial complex. Not to reform it, but to totally abolish it. And with that, you know, meaning we work with some folks that share a lot with, some other folks maybe not share much with, except for the fact that we agree that the PIC needs to be abolished. Now, insofar as the update on Imam Jamil that we had discussed about earlier, I think, I don't know how many of the folks, you know, who are listening have seen some of the updates that came out earlier this week. So if you don't mind, I'll kind of piggyback off of that.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay, one of the things is like Imam Talib from MIB up in New York had sent out an update earlier, and it talked about, you know, that there were signs of progress in regards of Imam Jamil. And the progress, one of the things we're looking at as a sign of progress was that Imam Jamil finally did see the dentist,
okay. But
it wasn't really a whole lot done after that. And I should also say Imam Jamil is aware that people have been making calls, and he wants folks to know he definitely appreciated it, and the family appreciated it, and we encourage folks to continue it. He's aware of something happening because there has been some movement, or at least, you know, mm-hmm. They look like they do a movement.
Right.
But because one of the things that happened is when they took the tooth out, because they gave him antibiotics for that, it helped with some of the swelling. But he has still not, you know, he has still not seen a physician. You know that when some folks are calling or sending emails, whatever, to the BOP, they're being told that he has been receiving medical attention. As the earlier email said, he hasn't. What had happened is like a physician assistant came by the cell. And I'll mention, like, what I find strange is not that it hasn't happened before, but in this case, it's like sometimes they'll send they'll let somebody at least see a doctor and don't do anything. In the case of Imam Jamil, they haven't. He has put in repeated requests for emergency medical, you know, to be seen in emergency status. And they're supposed to respond to that right away. And what we're told is that they actually haven't responded to it. But one of the things they did do at the same time that there was inquiries from, you know, we understand from some congressional people, what happened was he saw his case manager. What they did on that day is they more or less asked him about all the requests that he put in. They, in turn, implied that the day, because he put in the request, that he had been sane. You know, so they implied something that actually never happened. But like
right.
I said, so folks know, he has still not seen a doctor. His feet, you know, still a big concern. They are still swollen. And again, anything that, you know, any improvement seems to be maybe because of the antibiotics. Some of the swelling a little bit in his mouth may have went down, but at the same time, it felt like the toxins are still in his body. And by the way, in the last 2 weeks, he's lost something like 25 pounds, which, you know, and again, he's not eating in some cases because he still can't swallow. And even then, you know, there's still a concern, like, when he swallows, what will he swallow?
Right.
But if folks don't have the numbers, you know, I'd like to give them out now again. For folks, you know,
absolutely.
You can call the director of the Bureau of Prisons, Charles E. Samuels, 202-307-3198. And the direct number is 202-307-3250. There's also Lisa Gregory, who's the Director of Health Services, North Central Region. Her number is 913-621-3939. And if they ask you, you know, well, you're calling regarding Jamil El-Amin,
mm-hmm.
and his registration number is 574-555 if they ask what your affiliation is. You know, you can say brother or sister. But again, the calls are important, and he does appreciate them, and he appreciates the thoughts, he appreciates the prayers, and asks that, you know, they continue. But, you know, try to press them to, you know, be specific about what treatment he has gotten. At the same time, we should point out that there's a rally scheduled for Monday in D.C. that, you know, called through by Maurice Solacon for Peace Through Justice. We know that a lot of organizations have, you know, indicated their support of it. And, again, all of that's appreciated. We hope that people that are in the area can make it. They're raising three basic issues. They're raising the issue of getting Imam Jamil immediate attention. They are also raising the issue of getting him transferred to another facility where he may be able to get better treatment. One of the places they mentioned is Butner. We're not exactly sure that, you know, that he will get better treatment there, but the idea, again, is to push them to, you know, if he can't get treatment where he is, to get him transferred someplace where he is, where he can get treatment. And Brother Solacon, he also has as another issue, another concern in the rally to be held Monday, a review that people asked for, a review of the imprisonment policies relevant to the prisoners being housed under extraordinary conditions, such as the Supermax in Florence, Colorado, and the so-called control management units in different areas of the country. So that topic right there actually is something that you could actually fill a whole program with. I know that there's been several national conferences around the issues of control units in the United States. We've had several large meetings in Philadelphia itself. The American Friends Service Committee, for one, used to have conferences on the Supermaxes, devices of torture. We'd like to point out to people, and again, not to get away from the issue of the care for Imam Jamil, but we'd like to point out to folks that when the United States started out with one of the units, the first one they opened up was Marion, and Marion was guilty of, you know, violation of human rights. Marion was open, and they themselves said that the warden at that time said that the purpose of Marion was to stifle revolutionary impulses both in the general population on the outside and within the prison system. They had repeated challenges to Marion, but what ended up happening was individual states started opening up their own special units, and the federal government just went wild. Well, you have a place like Florence that people, you know, did a lot of work in the beginning to try to even stop Florence from being built. Now, not only is Florence there, but Florence has become a model for a lot of the practices that the U.S. engages in throughout the world. And the communication management units, one of the things they do slightly different is that instead of the individuals being locked up, it's the whole institution, you know, basically locked up. All communications are heavily censored. So, again, he raises that issue on this. And if folks don't know what those units are, we really, really advise them into it. Related to it, and it's something that, you know, y'all discussed earlier, is that, like, the U.S. and the way it treats folks who politically involved or folks who don't accept the status quo is, like, again, it is the response of a mad person. And while the United States criticizes folks throughout the world for their practices, I'm told, and I don't have the exact citation here or the exact document, but I'm told that, you know, according to UN recent U.S. survey, out of the 10 worst prisons in the world, 5 of them is in the United States. I mean, so folks be tripping on what's happening all over the world, and, you know, they have, well, sometimes they're protests, but a lot of times folks don't think about their tax money go to brutalize other folks or to talk about other governments and how they treat their folks, and got the worst record right here. And for those who protest, you know, the U.S. wants to make it perfectly clear, if we can't contain you in those state institutions, we will ship you to places like Florence. People have continually pointed out that Imam Jamil doesn't have any state charges. But under the interstate compact, you know, if a state doesn't feel that it can control somebody, And it doesn't mean that the person is violent, but if you're articulate and you can organize, you know, if you're an effective organizer, if the state can't deal with it, you go. And Imam Jamil, even though some folks think he is, he's not the first state prisoner, because we can remember when they shipped Sunday out of Coley out, New Jersey, you know, when they shipped him out in the dead of night. And there was a lot of activity to stop it. But again, the feds continue to go. So it's not a violation of their policy to ship folks out of state. Now, supposedly, you know, because they relate to international treaties, it is a violation to abuse folks and to violate their human rights. But again, these things don't apply to the U.S. But like I said, that's one of the things on the rally. It's a 90-minute rally to be held Monday, inshallah, from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's at the Federal Bureau of Prisons headquarters located at 321st Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. So, again, you know, if folks in the area, we strongly encourage them to go. And if they can't go, we urge them to look into the issues, make those phone calls, possibly even organize activities where they are against regional offices of the BOP. Because as folks pointed out, you know, we want the, again, we want the push for Imam Jamil, but we need to be pushing back at the whole system.
Absolutely.
And, you know, in an intelligent way, like I said, we ain't got no problem with folks looking to see if what we're saying is correct. You know, you can go ahead and look, do the research, and then challenge it. Now, I had also wanted to speak about a brother, Malmeen Kabir. He's also a Muslim. He's also a conscious citizen of the Republic of New Africa. Now, he's been since something like 1997. He was, you know, locked up. Well, he was captured in Chicago. At that time, he was on the FBI 10 Most Wanted list. They considered him to be a domestic terrorist. And when he went into the federal system, Malmeen was in good health. Over the years, he developed a COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And his condition worsened and worsened. We pushed for a early release or compassionate release. This was after their doctor said that he had like maybe a few years to live. They turned it down a couple of years ago. I mean, you know, after it finally made it out of the institution, they turned it down. He was told that he could put it in again. And from what I understand, it was again turned down. And by the way, he also appreciates all the calls that people did and all the emails. Anyway, he eventually got transferred to the medical center, the federal medical facility in Springfield, Missouri, where he's been for the last few years. Right now, let me see, like, it was recommended that he get a lung transfer, a lung transplant. And from what we're told, it's like he was one of the first or the only ones that they've ever actually recommended, a doctor inside has actually recommended that he get the transplant. We are told that it was approved on the local level, but it was another one of those transplants that got lost in the system. And this was a brother that used to be able to, you know, run all day long. Now he got to the point where, like, you know, he's winded after 5-10 minutes. I got a call from him a couple of weeks ago, you know, like, because they had him in the hole for 90 days for something that we're still not exactly clear on. And when he got out, you know, he tried to make a call, you know, two, three minutes. The brother was whipped. He has to carry around a portable oxygen tank with him, you know, which is subject to run out at any time. But, again, their thing about the release was that as long as he can move around, he ain't close enough to death to let out. I called last week to find out what his medical status was because we hadn't heard from him. I called a couple of weeks ago. Eventually, the doctor got back to me last week. And at that time, he said, like, you know, his condition was still basically the same, but they felt like he was all right, and that might have been the best facility for him. This week, we received a call from the family of another prisoner there, and that's frequently the way people get messages out. And he was saying that Naamin had actually developed a fever or something, and he had taken a turn for the worse, and he didn't feel like, you know, they didn't feel like he was getting proper care. I called out, and I was able to talk to someone in the office, and said, I'm one of the ones that, you know, that his information can be released to. And they themselves told me, yeah, it seemed like he had developed a fever, and his breathing had gotten worse than what it was, you know. Or, you know, again, they acknowledged that it was bad before, but it had actually gotten worse. I haven't talked to him since then. I have a request in, or they put a request in, for the doctor himself to actually call me and let me know, you know, what's happening with him. We did find out, what I found out today in between, you know, when we talked earlier, sister, and waiting for this call, what I found out was that we're told that now that he was taken to the hospital Wednesday night. Now, possibly the person I talked to Thursday didn't know that, so we're waiting to find out what has happened. I mean, I should point out, I don't mean the hospital inside the facility. They took him to the hospital outside.
Okay.
So again, we ask the folks to keep him in their prayers, and I'll give you all the contact information to him too. He's at Medical Center for Federal Prisoners, or MCFP, P.O. Box 4000, Springfield, Missouri, 65801. And his institutional name is Melvin Mays, M-A-Y-E-S, 09891-000. But his name is Naamin Kabir, M-A-U-M-I-N-K-H-A-B-I-R. And he defines himself as a Muslim who's a citizen of the Republic of New Africa, and that's one of the things he had also raised in court. For those who aren't familiar with this case, we also come out of the same, well, demonstration of Masjid. We're all part of the Masjid Al-Kaaba, headed by the man formerly known as Jeff Ford. So Naamin, what they wanted to charge him with was one of the things was like supposedly for committing terrorist acts for Libya. And that's what he was on the 10 most wanted list for. After he was captured, the offer they made him is that if he would admit or say that he, you know, was committing or attempted to commit terrorist acts, that's when Muammar Gaddafi was there, if he would admit that he was doing, that he was seeking to engage in terrorist acts for Libya, then a lot of other stuff would go away or wouldn't be there. When he refused to because it wasn't true, that's when other charges and indictments came down. Their case, his case, along with some other folks we got inside, at one time they had to be dismissed because it was a whole series of charges of prosecutorial misconduct. I mean, it wasn't just allegations. It was actually proven that there was prosecutorial misconduct in the sense that witnesses were paid, witnesses were allowed to go home, witnesses were allowed to have people who testify were allowed to have, you know, sexual relationships with whoever. And so after those cases were thrown out, they were tried again. In some cases, people were tried whether or not they were there. But like I said, he's a real good brother, can very much commit to the struggle of oppressed people. And we would appreciate, you know, people calling. If you write, and again, we don't know when or what's happened with him in the hospital, but even when you write, he appreciated it. One of the things that happened along with the COPD was that the use of his hands, like, left him. You know, he'll try to write, but he can't always do it. But know that if you send it and if you see it, he very much appreciates it.
Masai, what I'd like for you to do when you get the opportunity, please email me all of the contact information, and that way, family, if you either didn't get it tonight or you would like to get it via email. That way, just let us know, and we'll send it out to you, and then that way it can also be sent out to others. Those of you who are utilizing Facebook and other social media, we will also be asking that you post this information on your social networks as well. We need to make certain that political prisoner reports are provided wherever folks want them, and, of course, in any way that you can get that information circulated is certainly appreciated and definitely much needed. I think before we go a little further, again, family, we just want to remind you that this is our political prisoners report. We've been talking about Iman Jamil Al-Amin, and Brother Lesai has brought to our attention another brother who is also a political prisoner. And we're going to talk more about that, but I want to just recap for one moment, because what we're finding is that we have a family who are coming awake or becoming more awake, but still and yet we oftentimes assume that our people are aware of history. And so we want to connect some of those dots for you. Now, you heard Brother Masai mention or talk about the RNA, the representation or the acronym for the Republic of New Africa. Now, again, please take note of this so that you can do a little research. If you are not familiar with that, it's so very important, because we cannot move forward in the way that we need to if we do not understand our history to the degree of reality. The enemy makes certain that they know our history. They study it, they review it, and they look to see how to make certain that stuff don't happen again, especially the stuff that was, in fact, successful and had an impact. So it behooves us, of course, to make certain that we know our history. So for those who do not know about the Republic of New Africa, the Republic of New Africa is, in fact, still doing the work that it started many years ago. I'm going to ask Brother Mosai if he will share with us just a little bit of insight into who and what the Republic of New Africa is, because I am very certain that there are some who are listening who really don't know, and that's okay, because a lot has happened over these years. We are going to make sure, to the best of our ability on this end, that you do know. And certainly, as it said, each one teach one and pass it along. So, Brother Masai, if you would be so kind, please just share a little bit of information. And, family, we opened up tonight letting you all know that we are going to begin to enact some study sessions. It is so important to do so. No serious group of people or organization or persons, are expect to advance in what they're doing if they don't study. So we are up against some tremendous kinds of things in this day and age when it comes to the demise of our people. And that requires that we take the time, even if it's just 1 hour, but with adamancy, with intention, to know what it is that we need to know. So we have begun to formulate study sessions for our people. Sisters, we have some special ones just for you, because there's some specific things that we want our sisters to now know and be trained in. But there will be study sessions for any of our people that are interested. Again, this is one of the areas, one of the topics. The Republic of New Africa, what do you know about it? Well, we're going to fill in some of those gaps for you. I'm just starting to learn more myself when it comes to people like Queen Mother Moore, who I'm, really trying to get as much information about so that we can make certain that her name and the work that she's done continues on. So, Brother Masai, tell us a little more about the Republic of New Africa.
Okay, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, sister. And you're right, a lot of times folks don't know, and there's really nothing wrong with asking.
That's right.
Okay, the Provisional Government of Republican Africa was founded in 1968 in Detroit, Michigan. what had happened was, like, a lot of folks were saying, like, you know, they, among others, they had listened around that period to El-Hajj Malik al-Shabazz, Brother Malcolm, and he had talked about the need for us to internationalize our struggle, and he had also pushed folks to be serious. We were saying things like, it's nation time, and we're a nation. So people got together and said, well, you know, what is it that a nation has? You know, it has basic government, it has basic law, you know, it has common characteristics, which we actually had as a people, and it does have a land area, or at least an independent nation do. And we looked at the fact that New Africans or people of African descent here, one of the things we were the majority population in what was called, you know, the Black Belt South or the five states of the Deep South or whatever. It might have been as an enslaved people, but we were still the majority population. So we had a land that we could relate to. We also had, and this is something we need to remember and think a whole lot, we actually have the brain power to do what we needed to do as a people. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that sometimes folks be dismissing it like the idea of just a bunch of folks that got together over some wine or something and said we just want to separate. Again, for us it was a question of independence. And what we looked at is like, and I might throw stuff together, so, you know, stop me if you want to. But one of the things we looked at is that when the U.S. set free a body of folks on this land, when they supposedly passed the 13th Amendment, they set free a body of folks here. They couldn't, you know, like, we had certain choices that we were never informed of. You know, we could have went back to where we came from. We could have chose maybe voluntarily to settle where we were as citizens, or we could have went to another country that could have accepted us, or we could have decided, you know, like, to form our own thing. But none of those choices were given to us. It was like, you know, we're letting you go, cause, but at the same time now, folks, look at that 13th Amendment. It supposedly set free a body of people except as a punishment of crime. So what was happening is like they made Louisiana would be a good place. You know, you might get off an Angola plantation. You're no longer an enslaved person. You walk across the street. You spit on the street. You now violated their law. So now you're going back to Angola. But now you're going as, quote, unquote, prisoner. So, again, the choice was never presented to us. Now, what they did do was the 14th Amendment, what was that, a year and a half later, we hold that the 14th Amendment, you know, supposed to make anybody born here a citizen. At best, if the U.S. meant it as a good faith offer, then all it could be was an offer. You couldn't impose citizenship on us. You know, if we had came over by accident on a boat or something like that, you know, somebody came over and their child was born here, it gave them citizenship. But again, that wasn't our status then. So what people looked at in 1968 is the fact that, according to our understanding of international law, we still had the right to hold the plebiscite to determine the will of the people, of the new African people on that land. And this is where we get into continuation of the U.S. law war, because what happened is that, just like we're saying now, like there's nothing wrong with asking or people finding out, what the U.S. government did, instead of aiding in that process of helping New Africans understand their options and maybe helping to set up polling places, what they did was they started attacking those formations or folks who said that we had a right. So in 1971, because by that time, elements of the provisional government, since Philae had mentioned earlier, Brother Mario Badelli, you know, at that time, him and some other cadre had set up the Capitol in Jackson. And so FBI agents, along with some state agents, raided the place. Of course, the police got hurt. Whenever they get hurt, somebody else get charged with murder. But again, this was the U.S. response. And there's lots to say. But I'm thinking, like, even when it was founded, like, in 1968, there were individuals who signed. Queen Mother War was one of the signers. There was people who signed that Declaration of Independence. They signed it as individuals. They also signed it as representatives of organizations. So, you know, you'd have Queen Mother More. One of the first president that was elected, even though he wasn't in the U.S. at the time, the first president of the provisional government of the RNA was Brother Robert Williams, who was in exile at that time. Sister Betty Shabazz, I believe, was one of the first vice presidents. When we talk about Imam Jamil Amin, who was, you know, then at that time known as H. Rod Brown, he was Minister of Defense.
Yeah.
You know, we had another brother who's up your way now, who was appointed to be a special minister. That would be Brother Muhammad Ahmed, who was coming from RAM.
Also,
you know, so you
was
talking about
Stanford.
Folks, like I said, who, yeah, right, formerly known as Max Stanford. So you had to
right.
know that as individuals were strong, but they were representing some hellified organizations.
Yes.
RAM is another one. If folks look at the history of RAM, you wouldn't even have known some of their members unless they wanted you to know.
Right.
You know, but it was just that deep. And as we talked about earlier, this was men and women. This was men and women. They weren't murder mouthing nobody, but they knew what they wanted. They knew what they had a right to, and they were going to fight to get it. So you had that. You had the African People's Party. You had all these elements coming together saying that we understand, all right, that we have a right that we chose not to be, you know. We didn't want to be part of the empire. And that, and to the empire, that was actually, you know, that was a threat. Because, again, it wasn't just some folks that they could dismiss easily. These were folks that could function on all levels. You also had the organization organized, well, the above-ground formations were what was called, like, the Black Legionnaire. And so when you talk about brothers like Dr. Mutulu Shakur, Mutulu started as a legionnaire at a very young age, you know. In one of the first shootouts, and that's where wasn't the first time, but one of the shootouts when folks noticed him was what happened in the New Bethel shootout. That was in Detroit. I mean, you know, some of the early meetings were held at the church of Aretha Franklin's father. And again, you know, the state sent their agents in, the state get hurt, and so they charged folks. But we had folks that were skilled on all levels. When you look at formation like the National Conference of Black Lawyers, at one time you saw about half or better of the lawyers in there were conscious citizens of the
right.
Republican law. And when we refer to conscious citizens, we talk about folks who actually know that they have the rights, you know. Because there are folks, you know, our thing is that if you're a descendant of an enslaved African born in the United States, that you are automatically a citizen of the Republic of North Africa unless you make a conscious decision otherwise. But a conscious citizen is one who is aware of that right and very frequently is in one of the formations or bodies of the provision of the nation. Because the PG would just be one of the formations, you know, and as was alluded to earlier, the PG had a particular purpose. At one time, well, it was referred to as helping to prepare the people for people's war, but it was also to help to organize for that plebiscite. So it's you would have the ministries that were functioning both on the land and off the land. Because, again, of the activities of the United States, a lot of what people wanted to do at that time was stifled. We knew that the U.S. was vicious, but I don't think a lot of folks really imagined how vicious they would be. And it wasn't just the night riders. It was far from that. You know, we were talking about them folks in the courtroom. We were talking about their programs like COINTELPRO, you know, where your friends weren't really your friends, and sometimes you didn't
right.
even know who people were. Those type
right.
of programs. You know, we was talking about the harassment of families. We're talking about the vicious harassment, physical harassment of families. Any and everything to break up folks, just even knowing that they had the right, much less exercising it. So like I said, a lot of the programs originally planned didn't move along as fast as we would hope. At the same time, I would say that the desire for independence hasn't went away. And even though there's been a lot of activity to try to stabilize that struggle and, you know, killing folks, locking up folks, whatever, it hasn't really stopped anything. Of course, for us, one of the things that happens is that it means, like, we see a lot of destabilization efforts in our community where we get into things where we start doing things to each other out of confusion. We know that they did things like back in the 60s or late 60s or 70s, they would flood the community with things like heroin. And when heroin couldn't quite do the trick, because it could, you know, we struggled through all that. Then the next major thing that they did was a crack thing. So, again, their chemical warfare. But we look at all these things with efforts to destabilize us as a people. Whether or not we wanted independence, you know, it was just we're so busy trying to deal with day-to-day and what's happening in our community, we lose focus a little bit. But, again, for us, it's like we don't think that desire for independence, well, we know that hasn't went away. And we know that struggle ain't dead. But that's a basic of the position of government. But I encourage also folks to look at the history, look at who these folks were, who were part of the provisional government, who were part of some of the formation. I mentioned the National Council of Black Lawyers. You can also look at it in COBRA, because we recognize the fact that a lot of folks of African descent realized that they had a right to reparation. Not all of them related to independence, though, but in COBRA was one of the formations that Dr. Obadeli helped to found. Our thing in regards to reparation, though, is that, like, when you start talking about folks with individual reparations, which is cool, if you don't control the land, if you don't control the means of production, I can give you $1 million. But if I'm going to charge you $500,000 for a roll of toilet paper, you ain't got nothing in a little while.
Right.
So for us, a form of reparation includes land, land that's ours, independent, not a neo-colonialist relationship with the U.S., but one as an independent nation along with other nations in the world. And for folks who say, well, we can't do that because the land belongs to the native folks, we've had those conversations with Native folks over and over in a long time because they have no problem. But
right.
To that argument, we would tell folks, if you can say that to us, then you need to say that to each and every person on the North American continent. You need to be saying it to Mexico. You need to be saying it to Canada. And a lot of times that's what we hear from New Africa, where you can't have land. Again, we ain't talking about hogging it like the U.S. does or like Israel doing it. We're talking about developing relationships with folks who ain't got no problem with us existing, because we ain't talking about existing in such a way where we're trying to exploit them and their resources. We're talking about living with folks as human beings, both in the United States and throughout the world, because the aim of our revolution is, you know, like to free both ourselves in the ways that revolution to all human beings everywhere. So that way, it doesn't mean that we're talking about, you know, going and interfering in the affairs of other folks, but it is recognizing that folks can't exist on this planet continually trying to exploit each other. So, again, to the land claim, yeah, the only ones we hold say that holds a superior claim to the land that we claim as a national territory would be the Native folks, and they ain't got a problem with it. So we shouldn't.
I just want to interject one thing as we're talking about land. I think right now would kind of be a good time to add in that presently one of the issues and areas that we're looking at is gentrification. And I want you all, family, to know that we are in full support of various movements, our various organizations and so forth, that have positioned and have taken positions in securing and bringing about what it is that is rightfully ours, you know, all across the board, based on the horrendous types of things that have happened to us, et cetera, et cetera. Now, with that said, you know, one of the things that I spoke with Brother Masai early today about is how do we bring these things forward now for today? And so what we're going to be talking about in the near future is, again, connecting those dots. Here we had brothers and sisters that did tremendous amounts of work. You just heard how the Republic of New Africa said and did go into portions of the U.S. and begin to establish villages, communities, bases, etc. And so we have to know that that did happen. This is not an illusion. This happened. Now, where are we at today? Who's saying what today? How do we connect those dots today? So one of the things that we realize is that even though in the past or a few years ago, there were designated locations that were in the South, and Brother just indicated as to why, which made a lot of sense and still does. Now we're dealing with a situation that we call all over the country, but particularly in urban areas, particularly in locations where black folks reside. Now, why are our people being shifted, dislocated, relocated, moved, and what we call social engineering? Well, there's some very calculated reasons. Now, what are we going to do about it? Well, we have the examples before us of folks saying, we need to deal with some land. Okay. We have in our midst the fact that people are taking over the land. So now, what kind of actions can we do in connection with what our past has already shown us we can do and should do? What can we do today in dealing with the taking over of our communities today? Well, let me tell you, this is going to be very interesting. We had a meeting last Sunday at the UNIA ACL, the historic UNIA here in Philadelphia. We had a session there and began to talk about how to secure. Here in Philadelphia, you're talking about 44,000 vacant properties. Now, what that means, some of these are not buildings per se. Some of these are just what we call plots of land. That's how much has happened here in Philly and other cities. It's the same thing. So I'm not going to go into detail right now because I want Brother Masai to tell us more. But I can tell you this. Some of those plots of land are getting ready to get some visitors. I'll leave it at that for now. And it's legal because when you begin to look at the laws of some of these properties or land masses that have been taken over in our communities, some of it was supposed to be used for community public usage. You see, we don't know the laws or what they call laws because we don't know how the stuff is operating, then we do not utilize whatever few little things might be there that allows us to begin to state our positions and let people see that we can do certain things. Lastly, and we're going to go back to Brother Masai, remember in Florida, a brother named Max Ramau did something called the Umoja Village. And the Umoja Village was very successful for a long time until, unfortunately, like most things does, it got co-op. But for a long time, homeless folk had a designated place to be. And they fought and began to get people into the vacant properties, et cetera, et cetera. Well, we did something similar to that in Philly several years ago. And I just want to say to Brother Masai, when President Obadeli was going to Temple to get his PhD, I was a college student, and that's when I met him when he lived here in Philadelphia. So, you see, unfortunately, I kind of missed, you know, certain real powerful dynamics and parts of our movement, but you know, did have the opportunity to connect with some of the brothers and sisters who, in fact, were extremely instrumental. So what we want to do, we're going to go back to Brother Masai and talk about, he mentioned something else. Our brother mentioned something else, and we've talked about it from time to time here in New Day, and that is plebiscite. One of the things that the Me and Women movement has begun to do, has already started doing, and now will increase those efforts, and that is to hold what we call pre-plebiscite sessions to introduce to our communities what a plebiscite is, what can it do, what is some of the history of it as it pertains to other people. We want to provide information to get folks. Brother Masai, what do you think about that?
I think it sounds good to get them ready. I mean, for us, it's like, well, for the PG, the Vision of Government, one of the things we had hoped to do or try to do in different cities or different areas is to actually have what's called nation-building classes and also those sessions where we tell folks what a plebiscite is about, what they can do. In our particular case, we're talking about a plebiscite that would be conducted among the masses of New Africans to determine, you know, what political direction they want, you know, specifically in regards to the land. So we would encourage it. And by the way, national election because the provisional government relates to a system of a, well, electoral system. So there's different population areas. If there's so many New Africans here, they constitute a district. And from that district, you know, people get to elect their People's Center Council, which is the legislative body for the provisional government. So those elections will be held, I think, at the end of 2014, and we'll probably, okay. We will give you some information so you can run it, and you have people up in Philly. So we would encourage folks to get involved with that, and we would encourage them, you know, to find out what a plebiscite is, more so like what you said. If they look, for a lot of folks, if they look, they'll see that at one time that was in the program of a lot of Black or New African organizations in the 60s and 70s to hold that plebiscite. Mm-hmm. Of course, the educational part got to come before it, because if folks ain't
Absolutely. And
education, when we say that, we ain't saying that people are dumb or whatever, but, you know, folks need to know what it is and what rights they have, because it is something that a lot of folks actually did fight, you know, to fight for that right. I mean, not just the right to have the plebiscite, but to, you know, have it respected and to educate folks. So, I mean, we would be in support of it, the sessions you're talking about. Like I said, for RNA folks, provisional government in Philly, I could see them being supportive of what you're talking about, along with us throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. And that again, is what we want to do, because we know, just in having previous dialogues, that a lot of our people do not know what it is and certainly want to know. And so we want to set up the kind of mechanisms that will provide that information. Now, today, with there being technology, you know, so readily available, we can use it to our benefit. And so nowadays, even if you can't be somewhere physically, you know, there's ways to communicate. And so we want to really begin to do that more productively. Certain kinds of things we can do utilizing these, so-called technological things. And so these are some of the things that we want to begin to do. And that would keep in flow, an ongoing flow of information. We've been doing this program here, Brother Masai, for 7 years now. For 7 years, consistent, nonstop.
Okay.
And so it has allowed us to build, you know, a network, because people know we're going to be here at least once a week. Sometimes we're here 2, 3, 4 times a week, even more. But definitely they know we're here at least once a week, ongoing, for 7 consistent years. So we know that we can do this. We shall do this. We've got to keep the communications flowing. And that's what we've been working on. So, family, again, we want to remind you two things. One, in July, we'll be doing Queen Mother Moore Weekend. The Queen Mother Moore Weekend will bring the position forward for the African Women for Reparations cadre, what our campaigns are, but also to share with everyone what other groups, organizations are doing around the issue of reparations, repatriation, retribution, and what people call justice, reparatory justice. We now hear about what's going on in our Caribbean nations. So we want to provide, again, information and reports, connecting these dots. Where can we work collectively? How can we support one another, et cetera? That'll be happening July 25th through the 27th here in Philly. The call for papers have gone out. There are some special forums. One includes the what we call the House Moore Forum, or the Cali House Forum, because we want to talk about the work and the legacy and the history of Mother Cali House with workers' compensation. At least that's what it was called then. It wasn't called reparations. It was basically the same in some ways, but we want to be able to see how can we bring some of that forward. So these are some of the things that we'll be talking about, again, July 25th through the 27th. And remind you again, that's the Earth Day for Queen Mother Moore, July 27th, who, of course, passed May 5th, 1997, just a few months before the Million Woman March. And so that's why I remember it so very, very well. We have, of course, invited Congressman John Conyers, so that we can see what more can now be done with H.R. 40. There are some cities that have, in fact, passed bills, not for H.R. 40, but for disclosure, where these companies, insurance companies, have to provide information if they're seeking certain kinds of partnerships. That's done in Chicago. It's also done here in Philadelphia. So there are some things that can happen. We're going to be proposing that these various cities where we have 50% more population or whatever it may be, we need now committees to do the kinds of coordinating for more work to be done on H.R. 40, and particularly to begin to have city kinds of coordination teams to deal with this issue, to get information, to do research. So we will be talking more about those things. Lastly, we want to remind you that October we will have Million Women March Week, a whole week. And with that week, it'll be reparations. We'll be talking about the prison industrial complex, the new Jim and Jamaica Crow. Whatever you think we should be talking about, that's what we'll be holding sessions on. That, again, will be, I think, from October the 21st through the 27th. Again, papers are now, you can send your papers in for review, and we'll give you more information on that as we think. Also, we do plan to hold some free plebiscite sessions at the Million Women March Week for this year. So we got a lot of stuff that's going to be going on, and we're really looking forward to, joining and connecting with some of our Pan-Africanist, Black nationalist, progressiveness groups and organizations. Brother Massey, please do this for me. Could you please give out the contact information once again? But those who might not have gotten it, we want to make sure you are able to get it again. And remember, you can contact us tomorrow, nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. If for whatever reason you don't get the contact information tonight. Before we go back to Brother Masai, I need to ask, Brother Masai, is there a petition available, or has a petition been drawn up in regards to Iman Jamil or the other brother?
There is actually a petition. There's been a few of them online now. I can't give the specifics for it, but there is one. I know Brother Lukman Abdullah has one that circulates. Well, I think he has it on causes. Well, he does have it on causes, and you may also find it on Facebook. And for people, if people want other information on Imam Jamil, or if they want to donate to his efforts, there is the Justice Fund, and the address for that is 573 West End Place, Southwest Atlanta, Georgia. The Justice Fund. 573 West End Place, Southwest, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310.
Okay, great.
Now, in regards to Brother Malmeen, either they could write to him directly, or they could send, any information that they want to the Jericho Movement, and just mark it Malmeen, and most likely I'll get it. Well, not most likely, but they can send it to the Jericho Movement.
Okay.
And, if they want, they can. Can I say one, a slight couple of things? One of the things, when I talked about the land before, I didn't identify the five states that the PG, Provisional Government, out of the convention identified as a national territory. That would be Georgia, South Carolina, Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi. Even though it was held that, we do have the right to a claim to other land throughout the U.S. for the purpose of having a continuous or consolidated land base, what we had said was that our focus would be the national territory that we, would be working on. And within that, there's the Kush District, which is a smaller area. And part of when Brother Chokwe Lumumba, part of the campaign, when he was in Mississippi, folks noticed it was the Jackson-Kush Plan. On the what we consider to be the national territory, we relate to electoral politics. Not that folks don't be involved outside, but on the national territory, we see it as having a value. You know, it's a difference like whether the tax assessor or whatever look like us as opposed to somebody who's taking the land. So within the national territory, there's both a strategy in terms of electoral politics. There's also a strategy in terms of how we work and organize on the national territory as opposed to outside the national territory. And some of the links that you talked about before, and people have attempted it before, was even like trying to establish those links where, like, when we grow crops, for example, with farmers within that national territory, and developing shipping routes so we can ship it up to markets outside where there are no Africans, where there are co-ops established, that kind of thing. We also saw it as a place where, like, instead of us going to these other places for conventions, whatever, where we establish those places on the land that provide both an income for us as a people and at the same time make it an environment that we can feel comfortable and safe in. So, again, that the land, we see the land, that particular land, as a base in terms like providing even a relative homeland for a lot of new Africans here who can trace their roots even when they're somewhere else. Many of them can already trace roots back to those states that we identify. You know, they got family there, whether those families consider themselves politicized or whatever, that is already their home form. And a lot of them, especially as economic times worsen outside, we find a lot of them on the way back. So the thing is, how do we channel that energy into a way that's more effective for us? But five states, Georgia, South Carolina, Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi, that the convention identified as national territory of the Provisional Government Republic of Africa. And one slightly final thing, a large number of members of the Black Liberation Army, along with other formations, identify with being New African citizenship. The Provisional Government of Republic of New Africa states that it neither controls or directs those at the activities of the Black Liberation Army or any other formation, but we are very sure that if and in fact the United States reaches a decision equitable to the people of New Africa, to provisional government, that those forces will take it into account. But since there is a BLA, we are very much in support of all New African citizens doing what they got to do. And in turn, that's one of the reasons Jericho was organized to provide, you know, to aid and assist political prisoners, New African primary political prisoners and POWs, and what people say some allies in their efforts to be released. And I was starting to say that they're supporting them in any way that they can. But that's for other folks to do. But for many of us, it's constantly support. I'll just leave it at that, supporting any way we can.
All right, my brother-in-law, we give thanks for all of this great information. And before we let our brother Masai go, family, what we'd like to do, if you have a question regarding any of what we've discussed tonight, we certainly would like to give you the opportunity to share it with us. So you can push one now, and we certainly would love to hear what you have to say. We want to also add something to what Brother Masai just indicated, and that is, of course, you know, we are, in fact, a family. I mean, we have to at some point begin to recognize that, and it's so very important that even though we might have different objectives or different specific projects that we're working on, again, the whole idea is to now become as holistic as possible, and with that, to be able to bring these things together so that we can have greater victories. I mean, that's really the objective. The one thing that we know, there's no argument or no debate about who or what the enemy is. Okay, so if we stay focused on that reality, a lot can get done. So, again, if you have a comment or a question, certainly push one now. and we'd be more than happy to talk to you about what we've been talking about. And, of course, if there's something you want to convey about gentrification, as indicated, we certainly would like to hear that comment as well, because we really are getting ready to make some moves, both in a very proactive way as well as in terms of legal. We're looking at some possible class action suits. We're certainly getting ready in a few years to go into the UN, so we are compiling a lot of information that deals not only with the prisons, that deals not only with gentrification in terms of displacement, homelessness, and so forth. We're getting ready to work with some of the veterans, some of our brothers and sisters who are so-called former veterans. You know, let's face it, we have a lot of them who are now homeless. So there's something, you know, very strange about what's going on with that, but you all know that. Again, let's go to some of our callers. We are going to open up the mic for one. You have a question or a comment for us tonight?
I have one question for Brother Messiah. I think you said, I am wondering, from your perspective, what has been the most damaging social engineering from your perspective that's happened to us as African American people?
The most damaging, I don't even know what I can think of. The most damaging
strategy that has really damaged us the most, has it been, you think, the chemical warfare or the institutional racism, the penal complex? It's all connected in what they do to people.
Right. So, and because I think of them as all connected, I might say the damage of the chemical warfare. But I think maybe the psychological warfare they wage.
Oh, I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. All right. I think that was Sister Hattie. Thank you, Sister Hattie. Okay, yeah, I would agree. I think the psychological, because from there, a bunch of other stuff was able to go into effect. Self-hatred being one. You know, the hatred of others in terms of our people being another. All of this really, I think, began formulating through a psychological, you know, programming. I would also say, Sister Hattie, that so-called education, you know, and indoctrination is what it really was. And then also the concepts of religion. Also played a major, major role in our demise. So when you look at education, and we're going to be talking more about education in some upcoming programs, because we're starting to find more about how the so-called U.S. American educational system, how it was formulated, what it's structured from, you know, even going back to Hitler. In terms of the new type of programming that went into effect as a study. And that whole, you know, situation, the various doctors and stuff that were doing research for and around that regime, we have found that the present system that's now in place came from that, from some of the psychologists who felt that the way to move forward in so-called educating the masses was to deal with the programming as opposed to having them to think more, to program them. And so we then, you know, were given people like Pavlov and others. And so these works from these so-called psychologists and other behavior scientists began to go into the educational system. And hence we have what we have today, which is why the design of repetition and other kinds of formats exist. So rather than there being the capability of independent thought or thought beyond a certain point, the programming diffused the natural intellect capability. So that is something that is going on today, and this is why we're now having all these schools closing, because why? What are they saying? There's such a failure with the grades. The students are not performing well. Not performing well. All these things. So this is why, you know, we've done some research now, family, that really shows the diabolical kind of reality of, unfortunately, charter schools. And we'll talk more about that at another time and why now they're being phased, they're going to be phased out and go to private control, okay, which was the plan anyway. As soon as they got us away from wanting to have an independent school, because a lot of folks just, you know, jumped right at that whole thing when these people said, oh, we'll give you some money. Start a charter school. And so a lot of our brilliant people, you know, really committed folks, dived into the charter school world. And I mean, that's cool. But to totally abandon the idea or concept of independent school was dangerous. So we're going to talk more about that in the near future as well. But thank you again, Sister Hattie. Okay, again, if there's anyone else have a question, comment, please press 1 now. And we'd like to hear what you have to say. Keep in mind that when we talk about gentrification, that a lot of these buildings, such as the school buildings that are being closed, are being sold to private developers, and 9 times out of 10, it goes into some kind of very expensive apartment, condominium, or what have you. This is what's happening all over the country. And so it changes the landscape, not only of the community, it also changes the rents, it changes the taxes, it changes the whole complexion, et cetera, et cetera. All of this is done totally systematic, totally by design. And, again, if it's not in your neighborhood yet, 9 out of 10 is coming your way. So get ready. All right. Brother Masai, doesn't seem like anyone else have a question or a comment, even though we got a lot of folks listening. But I guess people just want to listen tonight, and that's cool, you know, because we definitely want to provide you with information. So what we're going to do now is have Brother Masai give us our closing comments for tonight. It's so interesting because I said to Brother earlier today, I said, Brother, if you could just give us 10 or 15 minutes, that would be fine. And I said, yeah, because I don't think I got 45 minutes worth of stuff. Well, guess what? It's been like over an hour. And it's all been good. Yeah. But wait a minute, Brother. Hold on. We got one other person that does have a comment or a question for us before we go to your closing comments for tonight. And let's see. We're going to go to caller at 8521. We're going to open up your mic, and your mic is open, 8521.
Peace. Tower in progress. How are you, sister?
My Hotep. All right, my sister.
My Hotep. Peace to the listening audience. I just wanted to make a comment today. I have a person that linked with me on Facebook today, and it was kind of like strange of this person bringing up the topic of gentrification on this link, Facebook, and he was saying that gentrification was basically the key to progress. And I was like, ho. I was like, gentrification is like the topic that we've been, like, you know, addressing, you know, as well as a whole host of other things. But I was like, I said gentrification. I said, first of all, some of our leaders and these new black misleadership has been the co-conspirator of gentrification that's happening in our community. They basically giving out these 30-year tax abatements, which is like corporate welfare, to developers who are coming into the community trying to displace the folks who are living there. you know, the issue of raising rent, foreclosure, and all that type of stuff. And he was, like, saying that it was basically good to have investors to come in that are on the Fortune 500 list coming in and investing in our communities. But I was like, wow, you want to debate the fact that it's not really good for progress, specifically for, black African-Americans and
mm-hmm.
people who are, you know, less fortunate. It's
mm-hmm.
not, and especially people who live in the community their whole lives, as well as people that have built the community, which is off the back of our people. So you think displacing us is a good thing, right? And so this guy want to come in. I hope you're on the live line. If you out there, Usman, Shabazz, you know, we ready for the debate. But, you know, I asked him to come in, you know, on our radio program that we have some very progressive folks that, you know, that's tuned into our internet radio that would discuss this topic. And if you're ready to debate, you know, feel free to call him today. But he said he had to go watch a fight tonight. So I guess the fight was more important than debating that. So stay tuned, people. He said he'll be coming in sometime the end of June. So if he's not listening, be ready to definitely debate him on this topic, how it's not progressive for our communities, gentrification.
Right. Well, sister, what you do is, I mean, let the brother know that anytime he would like to, you know, bring his position or whatever, we can always arrange it. As you know, we can do a special edition anytime, and that's an issue that is certainly one, you know, worth doing that, worth having a special edition for. Our position is that gentrification is not a good thing for our people. We know how it's marketed and how it's sold as if it is something to revitalize or to re-stimulate or what have you. But we know that in reality, it certainly does not do that, and we can prove that it doesn't, and we can prove that it's also a very slick way of doing something else that not only removes us from our history and culture and experiences as a people in these specific locations, but it also begins to put us in designated locations that they want us at, and the question has to be asked, for what reason? See,
absolutely.
Here in Philadelphia, black folks are all over the city, North Philly, West Philly, South Philly, Germantown, you name it. So the way this thing is going here, they are going to have us in specific cases, and it's not going to be as many as it is now. It's not going to be as widespread. It'll be in specific locations. Why are they doing that? Why are they moving us away from waterways as well as railroad areas? Why are they specifically recapturing locations geographically? So people can talk all they want to about how good it is for the city and it takes away the blight. The question has to be, why was it allowed to be blighted in the first place? Whose neighborhoods
Absolutely.
Are allowed to be blighted?
Absolutely.
And so forth and so on. And who will benefit the most from the gentrification? When they talk about jobs coming in, those jobs, for the few that will be for black folks, once the project is gone, them jobs are gone.
Absolutely.
Oh,
see, trust and believe,
so,
you know, it's happening.
I know, sister.
It's definitely happening, and as I always said, that we have our black leadership and these new black Negroes that are actually co-conspirators of this bull crap. You know, now here this brother is, you know, six-figure, you know, salary-making brother. And, you know, I guess, you know, we're going to call him the uppity, you know, successful black individual or family or whatever, and this is what they do. You understand? These successful black folks that we have, they don't even think about coming back to find out how they became successful, first of all. Most of them, you know, our people fought for them to even be, you know, getting higher education. And
right.
They don't know that blood, sweat, and tears and all of that are the reason why some of them are in these historically black colleges, because people laid down their lives, you know, for these uppity Negroes. You know, so some of them forget where the heck they came from when they become successful. And that's the problem we have.
Right.
We don't have these people giving back to the community. You know, we got all these black billionaires. The ones we have are millionaires, athletes, judges, doctors, lawyers, et cetera, et cetera. We could go on and talk about how many successful black folks that we have that don't come back and give back to the community. They'd rather go somewhere and live and integrate with the beast and call themselves living on a high horse until they'd be attacked by one of them, and then they want to come back calling us to come to their defense.
Hold that point because I want to bring in two more folks, and we're going to go back to Brother Masai, because I'm wondering about the gentrification there in Atlanta, because the sister that's calling you right now, she's in Newark. Brother Masai
and Brother Masai,
Atlanta.
I know Brother Masai too. I want to give him my salutations, brother. This is Sister Manera out of Newark, New Jersey.
Oh, how you doing, Manera? Hey, long time. Hey,
yeah, that's the soldier right there, Messiah.
All right.
Hold on, right there.
We got a couple of people that got something else they want to say. We're going to bring in caller. You're at 1613, and then we're going to come back to you at 8574. But hold on, we're going to bring in 1613 first, and I think that's my sister, Iya Ajua.
My hotel. All right. You know, just want to, you know, send some greetings and, you know, say, Mada Ase, thank you very much to the brother for sharing the information on,
yes.
You know, the political prisoners, and, you know, want to just also remind family to, you know, be in touch with their family that are also incarcerated. I'm speaking to myself
yes.
as well. Because all of us, you know, have a family member or two that are incarcerated for, you know, whatever they're incarcerated for.
That's right.
You know, stay in touch with them. And, you know, always, as always, Sister Felicia, shares so much on this show. I want to thank you, you know, publicly say, Mada, I say to you as well, for all the information that you share. But I had a question in addition. I wanted to know...
Mm-hmm.
Brother Masai, that's how you say your name?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Do you have information on any females that are political prisoners that we may not be aware of that we need to reach out to and support as well?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm definitely going to get on that email and, you know, contact for Brother Jalil Alameen.
And actually, some of us talk about that continuously. Talked about it again today. I'm going to refer you to Jericho's site again. That's one of the only ones I know of. On there, you'll see some names. I think though, you'll see some names on there. But I also think you may be able to ask one of those names, and they could tell you about some other folks. Because unfortunately.
Okay.
Everyone isn't on a list, which is bad, but they out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You'll find some females. You'll find some on that list, but I know that there's a whole lot more.
Mm-hmm. And Sister Iya, there's one. I'll send one. Her name is Reverend Joy. She's not what one might call a traditional political prisoner, you know, from, like, you know, back in the day, COINTELPRO thing, but in recent times, she was very, you know, very active in the community, doing stuff against police brutality,
or what we call police and governmental terrorism. And she's presently incarcerated. So I will make sure I send you that information as well.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, too.
And so basically all of the other, all of that fellow family members that you were talking about earlier, we can also locate their information on the Jericho Movement website.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Okay, that's powerful. That's powerful.
You
and
know,
also
the radio program?
Share with the audience as well that on Wednesday I'll be sharing about information with the National Million Woman Movement on a Wednesday program on Blog Talk Radio at 9 o'clock. I'll be on there with Brother OG Rafo. I'll be sharing information about, you know, what sisters are doing, because I mean we out here, you know, we always out here. We always soldiering for our families and our community. And so I just wanted to share with everyone that I'll be on that program this Wednesday at 9 o'clock talking about business connections and, you know, how families should come together and encourage the family to come together and do business with one another. So I was asking all that family to tune in Wednesday at 9 o'clock.
All right. How to access it?
Wednesday at 9 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio. Wednesday at 9 o'clock. It's OG Rafo, ODWIRAFO /Blog Talk Radio. And I'll be on there this Wednesday at 9 o'clock. And I'll also send you information I'll send you information as well to share with the network.
Okay, great. Okay. And again, family, if you didn't get that, just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com, and we should have that for you tomorrow, and we'll definitely pass it on and hope that you will as well. All right. And just also for those of you who have not met our sister Iya, you will definitely be hearing more from her with the Million Women Movement. She's going to be one of our coordinators for the upcoming Queen Mother War Weekend, as well as the Million Women March Week that will be taking place in October. We are finally starting to get some sisters
that we
feel really, really good working with. And I'm sorry, I shouldn't say finally, but you all know that over these years we've had some, you know, saboteurs and spies and stuff sent in. So, you know, it's no secret. And so, again, we've had the clean house, and now we feel very safe in saying, you know, we got some dynamite folks, dynamite sisters and brothers, and it's just going to be a beautiful thing. Okay, we're going to bring in one more person, and then we're going to go back to Brother Mister, because we only have about 5 more minutes left, and we're going to open up your mic. You're at 8574. Your mic is open.
All right, I'm back again. And as we already know, putting it bluntly, through regentrification, we indigenous Africans born in North America, also known as blacks, will be placed in concentration camps.
Mm-hmm.
And concentration camps are another way to confine, persecute, and execute blacks, as is done in the legal slavery institution called prison. And in closing, real quick, please remember, help encourage humanity for our children by calling in children, and we need to teach children safety now. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my sister. Okay, we got one more caller. You're at 9302. Your mic is now open. 9302, go. 9302. Going, going, gone. Okay. All right. We're going to go back to Brother Masai, and we're going to have our closing comments from my brother, and we want to thank him again for taking the time to share this information and this synergy with us this evening. As usual, has been, I think, extremely productive, very powerful. And I want to thank all of you family for tuning in as well. Because, again, you know, what we're building and have been building here with New Day and some of the other projects that we've been working on. And Sister E, I have information I'm going to send to you for the Wednesday program for the BBBCO and the In the Black Association for MWM. I was telling Brother Masai earlier today about the BBBCO. We're ready to proceed with that. And so, again, family, we want to tell all of you, again, please tell folks. See, summer's here. A lot of festivals is happening. As Sister Coco mentioned earlier, tomorrow is Odunde. I'm not a big Odunde fan anymore because now that it's so highly corporate-sponsored, it has lost some of the flavor that it once had in terms of the real African spirit. But it is happening tomorrow. But with that said, those of you that go to various events and programs, please tell the folk that have products for hair, for skin, for personal body care, let them know that there's now something available for them to market their products nationwide. We're talking about the Million Woman Marketers. We are here now. We are ready to get those products by October, and specifically for December, we'll have a catalog ready, and people can purchase the best products on the planet, made for and by Black folks. We plan to have at least 50 products for you. So make sure you pass the word. If a brother or sister has a great product, natural product for the hair, the skin, or for personal body care, tell them to get in touch with us because we've got the network. We can market their product. We can increase their sales. We can take control over that dollar to a greater extent to help our people. We can do this. We must do this. So pass the word. Million Women Marketers is on the move. All right, Sister Iya, I'll get that to you tomorrow.
Okay, sis, I appreciate it. I'll definitely be looking for the connection.
All right, good, thanks. Okay, we're going to go back to Brother Masai. Brother Masai, please give us your closing comments for tonight, and we're going to call this one a day, a new day, by the way. Brother Masai, go ahead.
Okay, and I should say, before closing, real quick, I should mention Brother Fahim Ali. He was the chairman of the People's Center Council Provisional Covenant Republic of New Africa. He was also a member of the Black Legion. And he's also was a member of the New Black Panther Party, and in fact had recently been made the National Minister of Information. He was murdered about a week ago. His home gone was this Wednesday, and you could probably find something online. But, we ask the folks, keep him and his family in your thoughts and your prayers. And, like I said, there'll be more information online. And in addition, both the provisional government, elements of the provisional government and the New Black Panther Party are conducting their own investigations, so folks will hear more about it later. But, again, he was a very good and relatively young brother in the scheme of things. And we know about all the elders gone, but that was one of the ones, like I said, that
right.
Young and bringing a whole lot to the struggle. So, again, keep him and his family in your thoughts and prayers. Other than that, I would say, Sister, and everyone else, on behalf of Imam Jamil, Brother Malmeen, their families and the community, we thank you for allowing us to, share that information. And on behalf of all the work you thank you for all the work you do in regards to political MPLWs and anything we can do to aid and assist, feel free to call. But again, we thank y'all very much for the opportunity.
All right. Peace. And indeed, it's been a pleasure, my brother. We look forward to having you back with us again soon, and definitely keep this communications and our connection building Family, we want to thank all of you all again, of course, for tuning in. And we will be back next week, same time. Remember, Sister Ia will be on Wednesday. And we'll have that information for you. If you need it, you can just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com, and we'll make sure you get the link and the call-in number, et cetera, et cetera. That's one of the new programs that's connected to our network. We're going to be having several more. Very soon you're going to have something called New Black Philly coming your way, and that is just one of the up-and-coming programs that we'll be bringing to you. We're looking at developing programs for each city that we have a chapter or a membership, I mean, affiliation with. Brother Masai has invited me to come to Atlanta, so I'm going to be heading that way in the near future to continue our development and building process there. So, you know, we're moving forward, as we should. So, again, family, we want to thank all of you for tuning in. Continue to pass the word. We're here. We're going to be here. I mean, it is something that we are absolutely committed to. And, again, it's time for some real victories. We owe it to our ancestors. We owe it to our people. We owe it to ourselves. Again, Brother Masai, thank you so much for joining us as well, Sister Toka, Iya, Ajua, and Sister Hattie. Thank all of you for tuning in. And next week we should have some further information on what Brother Masai was talking about the young brother who was recently murdered. We need to make certain that we stay abreast of that and in all things in our community. So, again, we thank all of you. So next time, we're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you, and that is in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. But remember, there can be no real Ma'at needing justice unless there is Hotep, meaning peace. But you know what we say, no justice, no peace, no justice, no peace. And we must have Ma'at justice. All right, family, we are out, and we'll be back next week again to thank Brother Masai. And until next time, promote you to the Shinda. Together we shall win. Tutana.